Welcome to the Refuge Recovery Podcast. Refuge Recovery is a Buddhist-oriented path to recovery from addictions. For more information, please visit us at refugerecovery.org.
Welcome, everybody. It is 5 p.m. on the West Coast. I'm Noah. Welcome to anybody that's joining us for the first time. Welcome back to everybody else. Just a reminder, this is not a peer-led refuge recovery meeting. Refuge recovery meetings are peer-led with rotating leadership. This is a offering from World Services, from the nonprofit. Part of our mission is also to offer some teacher-led experiences like meditation retreats, refuge recovery retreats, and also this monthly Zoom where I give some meditation instructions and offer some teachings that hopefully are connected to the book, but maybe not directly out of the book. Sometimes I bring some other Buddhist teachings in on these first Thursdays. I'm zooming in from Santa Cruz, California today. I just had to come up here this morning. My mother, who's about to be 80 years old, fell down and broke a couple bones, broke her hip. And so I'm being the dutiful son, helping out mom for a few days up here in Santa Cruz, California. And our topic tonight, this month, is mindfulness. I've spent the last, I guess we're 7 months into this series on the Eightfold Path, since we've been doing one a month, and we're on the seventh factor, 7 months. And mindfulness, which is core part of the Buddha's teaching, core practice in refuge recovery. And mindfulness is broken down, as most of you are aware, into four sections, what we call four foundations. I think I'll actually take the next 4 months rather than trying to just give you all four foundations and have a really brief conversation about it tonight. I think we'll break it down into the next four sessions, 4 months. So tonight we'll primarily focus on the first foundation of mindfulness, and then next month we'll open up to the second, and then the following to the third, and the following fourth. I'll give you a brief overview, reminder for most of you, introduction perhaps for some. The four foundations can be simplified into the first foundation is the body, mindfulness, present time. You know, I define mindfulness as present time, non-judgmental, investigative awareness. Just think, I know that's a lot of words, but you know, just kind of grasping what we're trying to do, trying to be present time. Some teachers say present moment. I try not to say present moment too much because we come to understand that the present moment is too fleeting to, by the time you say now, it's past. So when we talk about mindfulness as present time, it points to we're observing, we're experiencing time passing. Lots of moments, present time, the process of impermanence. Present time, non-judgmental. Non-judgmental is so important. Not that we can stop our judging minds from judging sometimes, but the intention that we bring to mindfulness, which is there's no good or bad. There's just paying attention to what's happening and not saying some things that are happening are good, some things that are happening are bad. Just paying attention to what's happening without judging what's happening. Some things are, the second foundation opens up to some things are pleasant. Some things are unpleasant, but removing the judgment from pleasure and pain and good and bad and even right or wrong. Present time, non-judgmental. What's happening without judging it as good or bad? Non-judgmental. Third peace of mindfulness, investigative, so that there's a sense of interest in what's happening moment to moment, what's unfolding. There's a sense of maybe curiosity, investigation. We could use other words like analysis or inquiry, or you get the picture. Present time, a quality of questioning and being curious and open to what's happening with a bit of a, we don't want to have too much of a detached observation. We don't want to be like watching our experience from afar, but we're in there and we're curious about it and like, what's happening? How's it changing? What's it feel like? What, you know, is the breath coming or is the breath going? Are the thoughts arising or are they passing? That kind of investigation, curiosity, interest, engagement, so that mindfulness is something we are doing, we're engaged in, we're practicing. Present time, non-judgmental, investigative, and awareness, which means I'm here. My awareness is here in one of these four levels. The four levels are body, feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, mind states, objects, thoughts, emotions. A lot of the emotions that we tend to say are like heart are also in the third foundation, are both our love and our hatred. Are in our heart and our mind states, emotions. And the fourth foundation, which is the truth, the phenomena, a lot of which is mind states, and included in the fourth foundation is the sixth sense doors. Although, of course, I don't know if you have looked at this deeply enough, but I had this question when I looked at it. It was like, first foundation is the body. Now, of course, the body includes eyes and ears and nose and tongue and, you know, all of the, you know, sense doors. But for some reason in Buddhism, the Buddha, you know, put mostly physical sensations as the first foundation, the nervous system of feeling as the first foundation, and then put hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting as the fourth foundation, as part of the phenomena of being mindful in the body. As you probably, any of you that listen to me or read the books, or I tend to include a bit of the sense doors as body, as first foundation, rather than tacking them on at the end as fourth foundation. Now, it's not like, I mean, when we think about the four foundations, it's not like, even though I'm going to try to talk about them separately, as you see, even trying to talk about them separately, I have to reference each other. I'm already referencing the second foundation when I'm talking about non-judgmental. I'm already referencing pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. We can't really separate the foundations because it's about the human experience. And the four foundations of mindfulness are meditation instructions. This is how to meditate. In the original teaching, the Buddha says something like, this is the direct path to realization, these four foundations. By practicing these four foundations, you will realize what is true and you will liberate yourself from what has been causing suffering. But they're not, you know, we don't need to completely, so it's, what I was saying is, it is an instruction and it's a description. Does that make sense to you? Just reflecting on, you know, when the instructions say, you know, your breath, your physical sensations, your feeling tones, your mind states, the phenomena that is present. Yes, it's saying pay attention to your breath, your body, the feeling tones, the mind states, the emotions. It is an instruction. Pay attention to these things. Investigate them. But it's also just a description. If you pay attention, this is what you're going to see. Here's a description of the human condition. You have a body that's breathing. You have a body that's feeling sensations. You have a mind that's thinking, that has emotions, that has views and opinions and clinging and craving and aversion. It's just a description of the human condition. There's no, it's non-judgmental in its very definition and in its teachings. There's no judgment about your mind should be different than it is. You should breathe a certain way. You should feel a certain way. All of the instructions are just like, yeah, you have thoughts. Yeah, you have afflictive emotions. Yeah, you breathe. Yeah, your heart's beating. Yeah, it's just all very non-judgmental description of what it's like to be incarnated, to be a person. And then we get together and we have that special flavor of incarnation, the addict, the alcoholic, the addictive, compulsive tendencies. And then we get together and say like, oh, wow, the Buddha pointed out what it's like. And then we get to normalize with our mindfulness. This is what it's like to have a mind that just doesn't just have normal craving, but has obsession. That doesn't just have the normal second noble truth of craving that's universal, but we have that obsessive, compulsive, impulsive tendency to get ourselves addicted to behaviors, to substances, to people, places, and things, all of that. Coming back to first foundation, and we'll meditate in a minute here, and we'll do 20 minutes. As you know, if you're attending Refuge Recovery meetings, there's several guided meditations on the first foundation. There's mindfulness of the breath as a specific, that's part of the first foundation. There's mindfulness of the breath and body, where there's a little bit more investigation into the body. There's mindfulness of the four elements. I know that meditation originally didn't have a guided meditation script. It's in the book, but so it doesn't get used as much, but it is one of our guided meditations, the body as the four elements. The parts of the body, in the original teachings from the Buddha, he gave a guided instruction to investigate the 32 parts of the body. And it's a sort of anatomy instruction of the human body. Of course, the body has many more than 32 parts, but that's what he included in the original instructions. And the corpse meditation, I don't know if you've been in meetings or if you've explored yet the mindfulness of reflection on observing a corpse and turning towards death and acknowledging that it's the final destination of this body, death, decay. All of those are part of the first foundation. Primarily, the instruction that we probably practice and that where Buddhist meditation usually starts is mindfulness of the breath, present time awareness of the sensations that the breath is creating. This is where the Buddha started the meditation instructions. It's where most people start. It's a very important foundational core practice to develop, but it's really important to not get stuck there. One of the things that they say about mindfulness of breathing and that first part of the first foundation is like in the beginning, it kind of protects you. It's like building a fence around a sapling tree. And one of the reasons that it protects you is because my experience, I think this is common, is that for the first time, we're learning to ignore our mind, to disengage from the planning and the remember and just come back to the present. And just that, it's like a refuge from the suffering that the mind is creating by being mindful of the breath. And so there's that image of, yes, it's like a fence that you're building around a sapling tree. Now, that's great when your practice is young, when the tree is young, when you're new. But if you don't expand the practice as your practice grows, as the tree grows, or using this image of the tree, it will start to choke the tree. Imagine that little fence that you put around that sapling tree as the tree grows bigger than the fence. I hope this image works for you, if I hope it makes sense, that the Buddha's instructions are now expand. Don't keep it tight just with the breath. Expand to the four elements, expand to the 32 parts, expand to the second and third and fourth foundation. Don't let your meditation be too small for too long. Now, maybe the question, natural question is, well, how long is too long? And I don't know the answer, and because I don't know the answer, because I think there's not one answer for everyone, you know, so I don't feel like I can say this is what it is for everyone. Some people will find after a few months of primarily focusing on the breath, they'll be able to expand. Other people will find, I needed a couple of years of using the breath as the primary focus and object before I could really expand. But if you've been practicing for more than a couple of years, sometimes I've been teaching meditation for a long time, 25 years or so. And so sometimes I'll meet people who've been meditating for like as long as I have, and they're like for 20, 30 years, and they'll still be just using the breath as the object for meditation, and they never expanded. And that's that image of like, oh, you're keeping it. You're choking out the liberation. You know, you're not letting the wisdom grow by keeping it too tightly redirected to the breath over and over. I hope these images make sense. So we'll do a meditation. We'll see where it goes. I'm going to try to stick with the first foundation, find a way to sit that is upright and relaxed. Allowing your eyes to be closed as you're ready, allowing your body to come into relative stillness, releasing any unnecessary tension that you can, just as we're already in the first foundation, awareness of the body, feeling the body and the chair, the cushion. Disengaging from the contents of the mind. Giving our full, non-judgmental, interested attention, investigative awareness to your hands and your feet and your arms and your legs. The trunk of the body. Feel how your belly expands and contracts, rises and falls with each breath. Let the breath become the focus. narrowing the attention. Breathing in, investigate the sensation that the breath creates at the nostrils. What's the temperature, the texture, the sensation? Without controlling the breath, just letting the body breathe its own natural rhythm. As much as you can, relaxing into the body, breathing all by itself. The Buddha's straightforward, simple instructions were something like breathing in, one knows I'm breathing in. What's it mean to know the breath? Breathing out, one knows I breathe out. And the instructions go on to encouraging a sense of awareness of the depth or the length of the breath. Is it deep or shallow, long or short? Without any judgment or preference for a deep breath or a shallow breath, just awareness. How's your rhythm? How's your body breathing in this moment? In this moment. Present time awareness of the breath coming and going. Disengaging from the thinking mind, taking refuge, the present time experience of sitting here with a simple focus on the breath. when the attention is drawn away from the breath, it'd be quite interesting to name, what is it that's drawing your attention? Is it the mind, a thought? Is that a plan or a memory? Just naming it without getting involved in it, thinking, and then come back. Disengage from that thought, come back to the breath with a gentle attitude of like, not now. Come back with a friendly but steadfast commitment to this mindfulness training. Gentle, but also the effort of disengaging, coming back over and over. Investigating the impermanent nature of the sensations of the breath. The beginning, the middle, the end of each half breath. Beginning of the inhalation, the middle, the end. The pause before you exhale. Where does the exhale begin? How long does it sustain before it ends? This kind of focused attention on the sensations of the breath, very useful, teaching us about impermanence. For the last 5 minutes of the sitting, expanding beyond this first instruction of breath awareness, to briefly investigate some of the other instructions in the first foundation, the body as the four elements, just sitting here, investigate the air element with each breath as we have been. Reflect on how not only are we breathing through the nostrils or mouth, that the skin itself is a living, breathing organism. We're in a porous body, the skin breathes. And that as we breathe in, we're oxygenating the blood that is flowing, the water element, blood, arteries, veins, keeping the brain oxygenated, all of the organs, muscles. This body is breathing and it is full of oxygen. This body is mostly fluid, almost 80%, 70 something percent saline, salt water. Mindful of the water nature of the body. The majority of our body is fluid. We feel it in the saliva in the mouth and the heartbeat. The earth element and the bones, the carbon. Mindful that part of this body is just like the dirt, the earth, the planet that we live on. And the heat, the fire element, the temperature, this water body that is oxygenated, running at an average of 98.5 degrees. Kind of a hot water body, like a hot water bottle. Mindful temperature. Solidity, liquidity. And air. This body with all of its parts, its skin, bones, organs, with all of the different fluids, the blood, the saliva. And just as the breath teaches us about impermanence, as we reflect and investigate the functions of the body, all processing, the heart beating, the lungs breathing, all of the organs doing their jobs to process nutrients. Impermanence, the obvious, constantly changing processes that this body is. And the final part of the First Foundation, connected to the impermanent nature of things. This body so much alive right now, these four elements. That when the breath stops and the heart stops, the mind stops, the elements disperse. The body decays. The four elements return to this environment. The Buddha encourages us to reflect on the decaying nature of the physical form after death, and to remember that we're not exempt, we're not separate from dying. This body is impermanent, the four elements disperse until there's nothing remaining but bones, and even the bones eventually will crumble. When you're ready, you can allow your eyes to open. Mindfulness of seeing, mindfulness of the body maybe moving, stretching, whatever feels good to you, present time awareness. Taking a moment to reflect on what you were just investigating, paying attention to. Does your experience match up to the description that when we're mindful, we will start to become aware of this body as the four elements of the different parts and functions of the body? We'll become aware of the breath coming and going. We'll start to know whether it's deep or shallow. It will give us a temporary respite from the suffering that the mind creates. We get to ignore the mind for a little bit and investigate the body. And, you know, ending with that brief acknowledgement of death, of impermanence, of decay, that these four elements are not permanent. This body is not permanent. Impermanence seems to be both the good and bad news. Or maybe that's a judgment, you know, maybe the non-judgmental is it's just the way it is. No judgment. But certainly to me, when things are painful and difficult, I'm so grateful that they won't be like this forever, that it's impermanent. You know, that's the good news. It will change. It will get better. It will pass. When things are wonderful, impermanence doesn't feel like such good news because it's also acknowledging that it's not going to stay wonderful. It's not going to stay pleasant. You know, we're not going to stay young and healthy. We're going to age and be subject to sickness and death and, you know, all of those end of life or, you know, somewhere in our life experiences that are often quite unpleasant. Traditionally, all of the foundations of mindfulness are investigated to see the three characteristics, what the Buddha called the three realities, the three characteristics of reality. And that is that whatever we're paying attention to is A, impermanent, B, unsatisfactory because of impermanence. It's not, you're not going to get permanent satisfaction from anything because it's all so impermanent, unsatisfactory, sometimes translated or pointing towards the unreliable nature of things, the unreliable nature of impermanent phenomena. And the third is the impersonal, the not self. And even that first instruction around mindfulness of the breath can be so profound. You see the impermanent nature and you start to see, the body, I always think I'm breathing, right? Even the way we talk about it, I'm breathing in, I'm breathing out. When you start to be mindful, you start to see the body breathes all by itself. I'm not breathing. The body is breathing me. I'm just aware of the body breathing, you know, whatever awareness is here. We have some influence over how we breathe, but we don't control it. You can't, you know, the body breathes all by itself, and which can help us start to take, as we expand to the third foundation and we start to look at our minds, we can start to take that teaching of, I don't take my heartbeat so personally. I've come to understand that my heart beats all by itself. I've come to understand that my lungs breathe all by themselves. I've come to understand that this body ages all by itself. It's not personal. I'm not in control of this. And then we start to see, that's the same thing with my mind. It thinks all by itself. It judges and it compares and it criticizes and it craves. And it's not who I am. It's just what the mind does. It's part of the autonomic human experience, breathing and heart beating and thinking and planning and remembering and worrying and fearing and craving. When I say it fast like that, I feel like the Wizard of Oz, lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. It's just what the mind does. So three characteristics, and they're called the three liberating characteristics. The more we understand impermanence, the more we understand the unreliable, unsatisfactory nature, the more we understand the impersonal nature of things, it's relapse prevention. Because then we stop obeying our mind when it says, you should drink, you should use, you should cross your bottom lines, you should act out. Impulsive or compulsive. And, you know, mindfulness leads to this intervention where we're like, that's an untrustworthy thought. And I got there by focusing on my breath and then expanding. I got there by first learning to ignore my mind and then to investigate my mind and break my addiction and identification with the body as who I am and my true identity, or the mind or emotions of who I am and my true identity. We start to see it's a process unfolding. Awareness is witnessing this process unfolding that we call I, me, and mine. So I went a little too far there, but first foundation, let's come back to some discussion about the first foundation, mindfulness of the breath and body, of the four elements, of the parts, the anatomy, and of the impermanent nature of the body, the corpse. Any questions about the instructions? Any questions about the how to work with this in recovery and our meditation practice? We'll spend the last 15 minutes with Q&A. Anything you'd like to ask about this aspect of mindfulness? First, let's keep it to that if there's some questions there. And then if not, we can expand to other topics. Sunshine, go ahead, unmute yourself and jump in.
It's more of a comment, and I guess we can expand on it more. I remember when we were in Albany, the silent retreat, and you were sharing about how long anger lasts in seconds. And I think you said like 90. And I was sharing with the mentee about that experience. And then in my own study, learning that a craving only lasts 5 minutes. And so I was suggesting to this person, like, if you're going to get highly reactive on the phone, just put it away for 5 minutes. And then sharing my experience about how I've now come to the terms, it's taken 20 years, but I don't have conversations where I'm forced into answering. I don't respond when I see people are getting reactive and the text messages are becoming novels. I just wait. And I've now been able to expand it to non-attachment with conversations or job opportunities. Like, for instance, I had a woman reach out to me and say, I think I was able to give you a lead to caregive for this woman 3 nights a week. And when I reached out, the daughter answered the phone, and I'm sharing about the current client that has dementia and how she went from nonverbal to now speaking and making jokes in a 6-week period of time. And she goes, I gotta go. People walked in. And I was like, okay. But she ends the call with, my mother's not near of death and she's not in hospice and she doesn't have dementia. And I went, now my normal brain would have gone, I need to recover this. I need to do something about this. I need to freak out about it for I don't know how long, maybe a week, maybe two. And I just let it go. And 2 weeks later, she calls me today. And we have an hour conversation. And I even shared about my experiences with us and this meditation thing we do. And it was just really enlightening to go, okay, like these things, like anger only lasts 90 seconds.
Yeah.
Like the height of it. And the fact that a craving only lasts 5 minutes, like it's going to pass. So this is all I wanted.
It's the good news. It's the good news that it's impermanent. And I like, you know, it's so important what you're, you know, showing by example of the patience, you know, and it's such a necessary and hard earned skill for us to be patient and to wait and to kind of not to try not to be so reactive in the moment and to give whatever's happening some time to, you know, unfold. Whether it's, you know, a couple of weeks for a call back or it's 5 minutes for that, you know, heightened, you know, afflictive emotion or craving or whatever it is to pass. But mindfulness does teach us this. And, you know, I feel like one of the things that I don't know how explicit it is in these meditation instructions, but one of the things we learn from sitting meditation is we learn how to be uncomfortable without moving away from it. Learning to sit still, right? It's a teaching, it's a practice in tolerance. It's a practice in patience of like, oh yeah, after 5 minutes, my knee starts to hurt or my ass starts to hurt or I start to feel anxious or fidgety or whatever. But the more we learn to just sit here and watch, I felt really strongly aversive to some sensations in the beginning or 15 minutes in or whatever it was. And then they passed and it changed. And, you know, it's a way that we are training ourselves to be patient and tolerant by continuing to sit and have that daily, whether you're just sitting in meetings or, you know, hopefully also having a sitting practice where, I can sit with discomfort and I can sit with physical discomfort. Now I can sit with emotional discomfort and I can sit with not knowing and not having to fix things and just be like, okay, let's see what happens. Let's see how this unfolds. What I know is it will change. It's impermanent. It will unfold. So I feel like our sitting practice is so powerful in that way too. Any other questions, comments? Yeah, William, go ahead.
I've been tasked with leading brief meditations at the treatment center that I went through. There was nobody really offering this. And I was talking with the director and told her, you know, that I do refuge. I also volunteer there. And she's like, why don't you come in and help these people out? Short term, small meditation groups. And I've been doing this for about 2 months now. Now we do it once a week and we meditate for about 20 minutes. And I'm asking these people that are coming in off the streets, you know, very, very little concentration with even sitting in an organized space to try and do this on their own. And I gave them a printout of like some gratitude meditations to kind of do on their own. But I wasn't entirely sure how long I should be asking these people to try and attempt to meditate initially, first coming in. Like when I first got sober many years ago, this wasn't even on my radar. And it wasn't until many years later that I came to meditation and refuge. So I really don't know initially how to instruct people that have no previous knowledge of doing any of this kind of stuff and where they should start with.
You know, here, I'm gonna say it this way. You know, 5 minutes is better than nothing. 10 minutes is better than 5 minutes. 20 minutes is doable for everyone, especially if you have some instructions, like we do in meetings. If you have somebody giving you the instructions, just about everyone can follow along with the instructions for 20 minutes. Now, Refuge Recovery is now 10 years. We're coming up on our 10-year anniversary. And we have hundreds of people who have come in, gotten sober, done the 20-minute meditations from detox to their first month, their second month, have been utilizing this format, which is a 20-minute daily meditation practice. We've got, you know, hundreds, thousands of people that are doing this and that it's working for. So I think that we are, you know, as a community and as a system, a meditation practice, you know, recovery system, are proof that actually people can meditate for 20 minutes, even when they're brand new, whether they have experience or not, whether they have ADD or anxiety or whatever the kind of co-occurring issues are. We can do it. We can sit here and be uncomfortable and, you know, learn to sit here and be uncomfortable and not be very good at meditation. And it kind of goes in one ear and out the other. And then after another month, oh, I'm starting to hear the instructions more and I'm starting to, you know, have a little bit more stillness and I'm starting to actually get it. So I Well, you know, I do think 5 minutes is better than nothing, but I think that 20 minutes is a pretty low bar for up for people to just do and to just prove to themselves, even though I don't think I can, if I do it and I listen to the guided meditation, it doesn't kill me. I can actually do it. So yeah. I encourage 20 minutes from the beginning.
Okay. Yeah, like you know, a lot of these guys, they're asking me because I told them, like, you dropping in once a week on a Monday for 20 minutes isn't going to change shit. Like, you gotta stick with this. You got to do this kind of stuff daily. And they're like, well, you know, how long do we do this for? And I gave them, you know, like I said, a small brief gratitude script. And it's about like 5 minutes. And they're starting with that. And they're, you know, saying, oh, this is good. But like,
it is good.
I want to encourage them after they're finished their program to, you know, continue.
Do they have access to their phones and stuff or no?
No, nothing at all. They're not even allowed to have books.
Oh,
But
really?
you know, like giving them the gratitude script that was allowed, and it's pretty, you know, like no phones, no books, no nothing. But they were okay with like a gratitude script, so that
Now
was something.
you might be able to, like, we used to, I was working in prisons at one point, and I did my grad school internship hours at San Quentin working with inmates, and we were able to, you know, even though they're not even allowed to have much technology, we're allowed, because of this issue around, we want to give them guided meditations. We need them to be able to listen to these meditations. This is what's going to train the mind and heal and do this work that we're trying to do. And it's, you know, it's one of the brilliant things about Refuge is that we have guided meditations in the meetings. We have the podcasts of the guided meditations. You know, you don't have to know how to meditate. You can just listen to the instructions every day. Hard in a situation like that, but might be worth talking to the powers that be to be like, hey, can we load some little, you know, kind of MP3 with just guided meditations so that they have access to the guided meditations because it will help their recovery so much, you know, that, you know, no outside contact, just the guided meditations on these little cheap, you know, MP3 players.
Yeah, I would honestly say that this place is really on board with meditation and you know, moving in that direction and giving people some ways to self-regulate their emotions, especially in the beginning, right? So yeah, it's definitely worth a shot to talk to them.
Might be worth, you know, might really be worth it because, you know, and then also when you're in treatment and you're so fucking bored and you don't get to listen to music, but you get the med, you know, they probably listen to it just out of boredom.
Yeah, you're not
And then
wrong.
all of a sudden they're meditating every day because it's the only thing they're allowed to listen to is these fucking meditations. It would be cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
Welcome. Time for one more if anybody's got one. If not, we can end there. I've what kind of announcements do I have? We're going to have a refuge recovery and retreat in Texas this week. Okay, I'll take your question. Yeah, Fizzy, go ahead.
Button. Do you have any advice on starting in-person meetings? Yeah, if you've any advice on that.
Reach out to us, shoot an email in the, there's a thing on the website where you can reach out to us and you can talk to Sebastian or me about what your situation is, where, you know, and we'll guide you through that process of starting in-person meetings. So shoot an email to admin, or to, where should she send the email, Sebastian?
I'll throw it in the chat right now.
Okay. Yeah, he'll put it in the chat so you can reach out to us and then we'll talk to you about that or anybody else who's interested
Cool.
in that. Yeah, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So Texas retreat this week. There's space if you or someone you know or is in Texas and wants to come out, it's Thursday through Sunday, the 11th through the whatever that is, 14th or something like that, for a 3-day silent retreat. So we're out in Texas this week doing that. And then in June, there is the Refuge Recovery 10th annual conference here in Santa Cruz, where I am tonight, in the Redwoods and not far from the Pacific Ocean. And I hope a lot of you are coming to that. If you are coming, register soon, make those plans. It can be really cool to get together and be in conference and meet all of the people and connect. And we have some meetings and we have some workshops and we have some fun. So I hope that a lot of you are going to join us for that. Announce that at your meetings. Let people know that that's happening if they don't know. And there's a few more. Anyways, everything's on the website. The East Coast retreat got canceled. We're looking for a new location for a retreat on the East Coast. Hopefully, we'll find something. The other thing is
Oh, I'm to Ireland. Sorry.
in North Carolina, there's a weekend retreat in December. So if you're in the South or have folks in the South, I'm going to have a weekend refuge retreat in December. And last but not least, there is the Refuge Recovery India Pilgrimage, where a handful of us are going to go to India, to the place where the Buddha was born, the place where he gained enlightenment, the place where he died, the place where he did a bunch of teaching. So we're going to like maybe 8 different pilgrimage places. Probably 20 or 30 people are going to come to that. And it's November 15th, I think, through 25th, something like that. 10 days with a group, with myself and a group in India, if that's something that you can do, please consider joining us for the Refuge Recovery pilgrimage trip to India. Lastly, this is done by donation. I don't receive any, I don't currently receive any compensation from anything that I do for Refuge Recovery. It's all currently volunteer work. When there's enough financial support to the nonprofit, I am the executive director, so I do get paid for some of my administrative roles. But for the last several months, there hasn't been enough support and not enough money in the organization to pay me. So I stopped taking any sort of salary for my administrative roles. I do it all volunteer because I love this program and I want to support it. But we do need to do some fundraising. Any amount that you can donate, that you can be generous, that you can encourage your meetings to be generous so that we do become more and more of a self-supporting nonprofit organization. Your generosity is how that happens. I think I said it last month, and I want to say it again and ask you to actually tell your friends and say this at meetings. Consider a $10 a month donation to World Services, directly you becoming a supporter by donating $10 in celebration of our 10-year anniversary. You know, we have hundreds, we actually probably thousands of people coming to refuge meetings. If everybody was given $10 a month, it would support the organization in a really good way. That's above and beyond what you're giving at meetings, but just actually saying to World Services, I want to give $10 a month. So consider that. That's my request in this 10th anniversary, that if everybody could consider a $10 donation monthly, that would be amazing. So I'll leave it there. And next month, we'll carry on with mindfulness and we'll open up to the second foundation, Feeling Tone. And I look forward to having that meditation and conversation with you guys in May. Michelle, you got something? Jump in.
Yeah, there's the April 18th group rep extravaganza and Refuge Recovery World Service Q&A. So if you are a group rep or know of any or have any questions, please show up and support the group.
Thank April you. 18th, quarterly, third Thursday group rep business, meeting. So come to that. Encourage people. Thanks for the reminder, Michelle. And thanks, everybody. Good to see you. May any merit that comes from our practice be shared with each other and shared with all of the suffering addicts on this planet and shared with all beings everywhere. May each one of us heal and recover and get free. And together, may we create a positive change on this planet. Thank you. Thank you.
Refuge Recovery is freely offered. If you'd like to make a donation to support us, you may do so by following the link in the episode notes. We appreciate your generosity.